listening to Pillow Talk Radio and Podcast.
Jack woke up with a huge hangover after attending his company's Christmas party. He didn't even remember how he got home from the party. As bad as he was feeling, he wondered if he did something wrong. Jack had to force himself to open his eyes, and the first thing he saw was a couple of aspirins next to a glass of water on the side table. And next to them, a single red rose. Jack sat up and saw his clothing in front of him, all clean and pressed. He looked around the room and saw that it was in perfect order, spotlessly clean. So was the rest of the house. He took the aspirins and cringed when he saw a huge black eye staring back at him in the bathroom mirror. Then he noticed a note hanging on the corner of the mirror, written in red with little hearts on it, and a kiss mark from his wife in lipstick. "Honey, breakfast is on the stove. I left early to get groceries to make you your favorite dinner tonight. I love you, darling." He stumbled to the kitchen, and sure enough, there was hot breakfast, steaming hot coffee, and the morning newspaper. His son was also at the table eating. Jack asked, "Son, what happened last night?" "Well, you came home after 3 a.m., drunk out of your mind. You fell over the coffee table and broke it. And then you puked in the hallway and got that black eye when you ran into the door." Confused, he asked his son, "So why is everything in such perfect order and so clean? I have a rose and breakfast is on the table waiting for me?" His son replied, "Oh, that. Mom dragged you into the bathroom to clean you up, and when she tried to take your pants off, you screamed, 'Leave me alone, bitch, I'm married.'" So that was a bar joke posted by user mediocre_log on our jokes. And I thought that was kind of funny, so I'd share it. So, welcome to today's show. It's episode 3, getting up there already. Gotta be honest, I was trying to finish a track to upload and share with you guys tonight. It's this jungle-type track that I've been working on for 2 weeks, and it's seriously fucking with my head because I feel like I'm getting closer and closer to finishing it, and you know, the composition's like relatively done. It's done, but the EQing and the mastering is a fucking nightmare for some weird ass reason. I don't know how to get the levels right. I mean, I don't know if it's just I have one too many compressors, but I feel like it's not even that many compressors. And I did it all before throwing a mastering thing on. I don't know. That's just technical mumbo jumbo. But yeah. So that's frustrating as fuck. And if you're an artist, if you're a non-well-adjusted artist, you think it's like the end of the world. You think you lost all your inspiration, all your mojo, and all that. But I have to force myself to think that that's not the case. You know, you have to look back at your successes, not just your failures, right? So tonight I've got a different song that I made about a month or two months ago, that I'm going to play for you guys. So, on with the show. So last time, I gave you guys a primer, a little introduction on degeneracy. So I'm going to continue on with that, and I'm going to go on to degeneracy versus pathology. So as you may remember, I discussed degeneracy more so as like, okay, it can go either way. You can be a complete maggot. Scum to the earth, and I'm saying scum to the earth, not scum of the earth, which is, you know, a common insult. Or a happy-go-lucky guy that just likes to overindulge every once in a while to varying limits, right? So that's the context that I'm going to be using the word degeneracy, just in case you get tripped over the syntax. Degeneracy versus pathology. So if you like to indulge in, let's just call them the sexual arts, that's, you know, I mean, who am I to say if that's okay or not? That's up to you. I may be more modest than some, more prudish even. And then to others, I may be just a fucking lascivious, if that's the right word. What's another word? Lecherous? Is that another one? Oh, well, a sex fiend, right? To some. It's important to realize, in my opinion, that in this day and age, society is becoming increasingly open to new modalities of thinking. And words like sex positivity get thrown around. And don't get me wrong, like a lot of this podcast is about, I'm just going to say it's obviously about sex, a lot of it. So it comes to a point where when is sex not just, say, an addiction to some that use it as an escape or a healthy form of self-expression, but when does it become pathological? And a lot of the material I've read on cluster B pathology, specifically sociopathy, and you could compare it to other things like borderline and histrionic and narcissist PD, is it kind of doesn't have any tendrils of guilt or shame strung along, or at least if you look closely enough, you may not see them as readily. And again, this is where it becomes more complicated, because in this modern day and age, less people are ashamed about it, which can be good. But at what point do you not see the fact that this person may just be using others for other things, like, you know, sex is a tool of control. Sex is just an escape of boredom due to emotional bankruptcy. So at what point is this individual just morally bankrupt? The lines are becoming more blurred. So I'm reading this book right now called Evil Genes. It's right next to, well, it's behind me. I don't want to get up and have to get myself tangled in these wires. But it's written by an engineer, former ex-army, well, former army sergeant, I believe. And she's worked on a Russian, you know, a Soviet shipping boat and all this other stuff. Really adventurous person. Not really an individual you think of to write a book on this kind of thing. But she's not bad, you know, and like she brings up a lot of good points. She has a holistic understanding of the pathologies. My only problem and my critique is she, at least at the beginning of the book, she talks about individuals Machiavellian rather than pathological. And I think that's kind of dangerous, because if you look at the type of individual who's naturally Machiavellian, then you would see that there has to be something in their mind that shuts off the empathy, and their sole drive is to essentially conquer. The book is called fuck it, I'll just get it. Hold on a second. Okay, so I got it. It's called Evil Genes: Why Rome Fell, Hitler Rose, Enron Failed, and My Sister Stole My Mother's Boyfriend. So that title in itself is very telling, because, and this is the thing I've been trying to tell people for a long time, and I get really upset why they don't listen to me, and they think, I'm sure you've experienced that before when people just don't listen. I mean, they don't have, I mean, you don't, I mean, yeah, it's true, like they don't, who am I to have them like listen to me about everything that I say. It's my own opinion, right? But my own opinion is, with sociopathy itself and in the DSM-5, it's referred to as antisocial personality disorder. Okay, statistically, there are 4% of society has that disorder. 1 to 5% is known to have that disorder in other studies. Sociopaths aren't necessarily individuals who murder people with axes. They aren't only the people at the top that make huge corporations crumble. Hitler is not the only sociopath. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, what a stupid thing to say, right? But I'm trying to suggest that the title is haunting because the final example juxtaposes the rest. You have these really grandiose failures caused by impulsive, ruthless psychopaths. And then, oh, and my sister, who stole my mother's boyfriend. And she goes into detail about how she did it in the beginning of the book. And the interesting thing about her name is Barbara Oakley. What she writes is that she goes through her sister who's passed away. She goes through her diary. And that's how she gets an insight into this really fucked up, not academic, but really fucked up individual. But people do this all the time. I remember my mom telling me a story like that that she experienced in high school, something that I would say, hey mom, that person was probably a sociopath. And I'm not going to use the term Machiavellian because that gives it an air of romance. It makes it seem like this person doesn't have something wrong with them, and it makes it seem like they can change. And a lot of times these people cannot change. It's embedded, it's hardwired. It's like firmware on a computer. It's hardwired into their brain. Their prefrontal cortex does not function the way that we do. And that has a lot to do with that part of the brain has a lot to do with judgment and processing emotions and all that other stuff. So, and these things are genotypic from what I understand. And it's interesting if you've had a very personal run-in with these types of individuals, because I have a few times actually. And I remember one time I hooked up with a girl. I delivered pizza at her house. And it's not like this is like I just hooked up with her the day that I met her or anything like that. I had seen her around. She was part of my social group. And you hear a lot about these descriptions of these individuals, and like one of their tells is you get like this kind of ominous presence and you get this predatory stare. And I remember when she was walking up to the door with the money, she had these like almost fish-like, shark-like eyes that snapped out of like, you know, a pretty normal disposition into a predatory stare. And at that point, I had no idea about this kind of shit. I had just gotten a really eerie feeling. I was meditating a lot back then, and I was like, what the fuck? You know, but of course, you don't, if you're really unaware of this stuff, you kind of get roped in. And roped in did I get. So, I won't be naming any names, obviously, for obvious reasons. But that was one. She used a lot of push-pull games, really hard games, really sick individual. And then my ex-girlfriend, I wouldn't consider her a sociopath, but some people consider anyone in cluster B disorders to be a sociopath. Her, she was for sure a hardcore borderline. And these people, for example, borderlines, which happen to be mostly female, statistically speaking, and some academics argue that these types of individuals with borderline that are female, that is like the female version of male sociopathy. I tend to disagree because the first one I mentioned was for sure not borderline-ish. And my ex was definitely borderline-ish and exhibited antisocial tendencies. she had these really nebulous, vague descriptions of things she's done in the past. Or, for example, she would say, "Oh yeah, I just hung out with my friend." Seems innocent enough, but when you look at the context, you could probably pull it together later on that this friend was more like a fuck buddy that she had on the side. So I'm glad that that only lasted 3 months. Some people get roped in for like a lot longer of a time, you know. And it's funny because, like, sometimes you may catch them in that lie, or you may immediately suspect, because their lies are driven on impulse rather than, because these are impulsive types of individuals. That's an attribute of all cluster B personality disorders. So sometimes what's really fucked up is sociopaths have really, really insane machinations and are extremely calculating. So they may not be as impulsive with their lies at times. That's something that they just bring you into a web. And it's really, dude, just, I'm telling you, like, read Without Conscience by Dr. Robert Hare. Professor Emeritus, or whatever. Well, he is like a big dog at University of British Columbia, and he's one of the leading experts of psychopathy. Read that book. So that was Without Conscience. And if you're in a corporate environment, Snakes in Suits by him and another individual. And this is, I believe, I've been practicing martial arts off and on throughout my life. I think self-defense also comes into psychology and understanding other individuals who can be predatory and Machiavellian by nature. Narcissists are all around us. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm paranoid, that, like, I don't trust anyone to a healthy degree. I'm just saying, like, especially if you're dating and you're trying to give your heart to someone, really think about the individual, because a lot of times guys will blame a girl for just being a girl when she's actually just a heartless borderline that has, I mean, I'm going to be really merciless here. I don't believe that there is a chance for recovery. There's probably a chance for treatment, but there's a huge chance to relapse into the behavior. I mean, because you're dealing with someone whose brain is just wired to do different things. And I'll just get into the reason why I think these people turn out like that, because they say it's nature and nurture. But anyway, so my ex would start arguments out of nowhere. That's one thing. And a lot of times it'd be completely baseless, and she would take a long time to return to a cognitive baseline, to where she wasn't upset anymore for no reason. Like, there was absolutely no reasoning. Breakups often, accusations of cheating, when in reality, if you look at a lot of the literature on this stuff, a lot of times this is when you know, like, they've begun to start cheating. And again, people can exhibit one or two of these traits, but I'm going to pull up Dr. Robert Hare's checklist of psychopathy. And even though a lot of these are about violence, female psychopaths don't exhibit a lot of these, because socially speaking, they've been socialized not to be as violent. But I don't know, that there, that could be like a biological component too. Okay, let's see if this is it. Okay. Yeah. Excess and glibness. Okay, superficial charm. You'll find a lot of these sociopaths and cluster B types, maybe not borderlines too much, because they tend to be a bit, sometimes meeker, I don't want to use that word, but a bit more subdued. But this is sociopathy, so I'll stick to that. Excessive glibness, superficial charm. Keep in mind, one of the top three, I believe, or at least top five professions for a psychopath to get into, sociopath to get into, is sales, right? And I'm sure you've met really sketchy feeling salesmen, car salesman types, just, you know, that's something to look for. Grandiose sense of self-worth. Okay, these people, you may not see it at first, maybe you would with a narcissist, but getting closer to a sociopath or borderline, they'll idolize themselves. They'll say like that they're better than people. One friend that I have that I suspect is a narcissist does exhibit that and has said that they feel like they're better than other people. Excess need for stimulation or proneness to boredom. That's why they seek out drugs, sex, violence, and all that. Pathological lies. Oh, dude, my ex was a fucking liar. You know, and this isn't, I don't mean to make this sound like a vent. I'm just using this for an example, but a lot of her stories of her, the way she grew up, just would not add up. I remember one time she was having like a fucking walkout. We were supposed to have a good night. She stormed off at my old school, and she even picked up like a piece of glass. And this is what she claims. She could have done this beforehand. I mean, but she probably did it that night. She squeezed a piece of glass, self-harm, borderline. That's another characteristic, self-harm. Squeezed a piece of glass until her palm bled. And I was on Studebaker somewhere trying to find her. And I was just going to dip because I was like, okay, well, she's not. I called her like 10, 15, 20 times. Not responding, not cooperating. So there's nothing else I can really do. Nothing. So as I was getting on the freeway, hits me back up. And she's like, okay, well, I'm here, here, here. So I see her. I pull up. I see her. She walks the opposite direction. She goes across the street. And she waits there at the Jack in the Box, and I see her in full sight. All I have to do is flip a bitch, and she's in my line of sight the whole time. I get there no more than 45 seconds later. I pull up and she says to me, yeah, did you see that guy hit on me right now, blah 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 blah. There was literally no guy there. And I ask her, so, oh really, like what was he like? And she's like, I don't know, just some guy. Like, she gave like no detail, and usually a good lie is comprised of a fair amount of detail but not too much. If there's too much detail, I don't know why I'm giving you this, I don't want anyone to start becoming a better liar, but if you give too much information, you've obviously thought about it way too much. It's premeditated. If there's not enough, it was an impulsive lie. But she would do this kind of stuff, and even sketchier stuff, the whole time. But this is characteristic of all, or lying of accomplishments and stuff, embellishing accomplishments. So that's that. Conning and manipulative behavior, self-explanatory. They want what they want, and they're going to do pretty much anything to get it. Lack of remorse or guilt. That's probably one of the biggest ones, I think. Because if you have remorse or guilt, you have a chance to repair the other ones there. You know, I think that's the cornerstones of sociopathy and cluster B personality disorders. Funny enough, one time, in the time I was dating my ex, she was going to Universal Studios with her family. That could have been code for like, or that could have been like a slanted lie, which I suspect that she was actually going with her ex, who she has her child with, which is technically her family, because she was wearing a shirt that I would wonder why she would be wearing around her blood family. So anyway, so she comes back, and I have a gift for her, and she's wondering like why I didn't call her, whatever, whatever. But it's just like dribbling, just nonsense. It was a pointless argument. So I go out and drop off the thing, and she's like, why'd you park halfway down the fucking street? I park one house down, and it's not to disturb her family. And she starts to have this crazy look in her eye. And so I'm just like, okay, well, take these. I'm leaving. Fuck that. And she calls me like 20 times in like the next hour. I'm on the phone. I'm like, listen, dude, I need to go to fucking sleep. I am about to graduate with my BA something that took me essentially 11 years to do. No, actually, 9 years to do. No, I think 11. And I really need to make sure I graduate with as good of grades as I can. And she literally tells me, fuck your graduation. Mother's Day is just once a year. So this person has a warped sense of what matters, and that's, in a sense, narcissism, because it puts herself up over my thing. A Hallmark holiday like Mother's Day is more than her then-boyfriend's graduation. And like it says under here, sociopaths don't feel bad when they do bad things. Do they have shallow affect? Shallow affect essentially means, like, do their emotions seem hollow? The eerie thing about sociopaths is that they tend to, at an early age, learn how to mimic the emotions of others around them, because they don't really have them themselves. And it's sketchy when you think, okay, sociopaths don't have emotion. That's really scary. And it is. Because they don't relate to human beings. They see them as moving objects. And keep in mind, again, this is 1 to 4 people in 100 individuals. Borderline, it's a bit different. It's, people say, like, they're more emotional. I only partially agree with that. In my experience, and from what I gather, is that they are more emotional in, like, a few basic emotions. While sociopaths may not have many at all, or they're extremely blunted, borderlines have an extreme level of, like, 3. So say, like, the normal human being has, like, a decent amount, for the most part, a full set of, like, 32 crayons. I'd say sociopaths have, like, black and white, which is, and I don't mean that in the term of, like, the way that it's used for borderline. I just meant, like, it's fury, rage, envy. And then for borderlines, it's, like, extreme sadness, anger, envy, sorrow, and then, like, maybe, like, happiness. Not joy, but, like, a hollow happiness that they get from, like, you know, a thrill of infatuation. So they just have a few more colors in the sociopaths, and they're uncontrollable for the most part. Callous and lack empathy, that's another one. A parasitic lifestyle. Definitely my ex. Definitely a lot of cluster Bs, if not all of them. And just be aware of that. Because they aim for people who can offer them anything. Social status. Something good to look at. Someone with a future. Poor behavioral controls, that's another one. That's number 10. Number 11, do you have a history of promiscuous sexual behavior? Watch out for that. I'm telling you, the lines are getting blurred. Do you have a history of early behavioral problems? Well, that's something that my ex also had. She would claim that she was beaten by her father. But when I look at it, there's a lot of stuff she would say, like, well, why'd your dad hit you like that, or whatever, whatever. She would say, like, oh, because, like, he found out I was hanging out with my friend. Okay, that's sketchy. That's very vague. And I said, well, what were you doing with your friend? She was like, I don't know, hanging out with my friend. Again, very sketchy, very nebulous. An ambiguous response that could be a half-truth, which I consider a lie. And this could have also been a manipulation to say, like, oh yeah, my dad's bad, he hit me, which in reality is, like, my dad is pretty frustrated with my behavior, and he was kind of heavy-handed at times because I just couldn't be corrected, right? So cluster B types are notorious for giving a pity play. They'll jump into, like, their early childhood traumas as a reason, because they know that that's going to play on the sympathy cards of others. Okay, number 13, lacking long-term realistic goals. Psychopaths prefer crazy schemes over life or career goals. Number 14, overly impulsive, self-explanatory, high level of irresponsibility. Are they in debt? Blah, 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 blah. Dude, like, my ex did not care about her kid. I remember we were in the kitchen. She let her, like, I won't give away the age, but it's between 0 and 4 years old. She let her kid on the counter while she wasn't looking. And I'm like, dude, you don't want to watch after your kid? Like, it could fall in, like, crack its head open off, like, you know, 4.5 feet of counter. Didn't feed him well. And then when I would inquire about it, she would just say, okay, I can't believe you brought up my son. This, you know how I'm insecure I am of being a mother, which is basically saying, like, you're not allowed to speak about my son because I don't want to hear about how bad of a mother I am and the fact that I don't care about it. Number 16, do you fail to accept responsibility for your own actions? Totally. Have you had many short-term marital relationships? Yep. 18, do you have a history of juvenile delinquency? Yep. Have you experienced a revocation of conditional release? So this is a criminal versatility. Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, they don't have to have all these. They could have like maybe 60%, 50%, even 40% of these, and they'd still be considered that. So really keep that in mind. Also, the sex with these people is known to be like one of a kind. They're renowned for that because they don't have much inhibition in things. So just be on the lookout. And with that, that concludes this part of my podcast. And next up, I'm going to close you out. But in the meantime, here's A Ray of Sunshine with one of my recent favorite tracks, Solar Reactor. So, Solar Reactor, I was inspired because I'm really a big fan of the sun. I love it. It's just full of power. You know, there's nothing like the sun shining on a beautiful day, or when the sun shines just right. And it illuminates everything. And apparently there's a long lineage of artists that have really fallen in love with the sun. And, well, I mean, because the thing is, if you look about it, it colors the world. You know, it illuminates the world. That's the reason why we get to see everything. And I really love it. And I liked that that song sounded like a reactor that manufactures this kind of sun-like power. It's really optimistic, really happy, and I dig it. So I hope I can get my shit together and either put this track that I'm working on currently on the shelf and start a new track that I can hopefully start playing for you guys next week, or just finish the one that I'm on and present it or whatever, because I don't know. I think I'm going to shelve it for now, and it's maybe going to be like a little B-side or a rarity that I'm going to polish later on in the next month, 2 months, months, years, whatever. So ideally, I'll have something for you soon, something fresh. All right. And with that, see you next time for episode 4. Bye now.